Welcome to this week's edition of Education Transformation. My name's Lee Ridge. In this episode, I speak with Tony Stone, the Managing Director of ASC Training and Development. ASC Training and Development is a highly respected Australian-based registered training organisation. In the discussion, Tony kindly shares some of the lessons learned from a career in educational leadership. Did you know Transformation Consultancy also delivers online professional development? Please take a look at our website at www.transformationconsultancy.com.au. So today we are joined again with Tony Stone from ASC Training and Development. Thanks, Tony, for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be back, Lee.
Okay, so you run a really successful registered training organisation in Australia. And it's been running for quite some time. So part of that process, of course, is being able to develop a vision for the business for both in the current days, but also into the future. So how have you gone about that? How have you sort of formulated the vision for your business and then refined that approach and then communicated the necessary requirements to the team?
Sure. Look, I think in the first instance, when you're looking at setting a vision or a course for your company, don't abandon your personal values. For instance, our vision, you know, is along the lines of being the leading national provider of learning and development, and we have a mission that sits next to that, which is to change people's lives through learning. So, you know, how we achieve this will be driven by both my values and the shared values of the whole team. And I guess like every industry, the vet landscape is populated with, you know, opportunistic training providers who are driven, you know, more by money and profit. And that's okay, but only if it's backed up by values such as integrity and, you know, a desire to give the client the best experience and so on. So, you know, that's the first part of it. I think allow yourself to dream a little, visualize what success would look like for your business without contradicting those values, and then critically marry it up against what's trending in the marketplace, new opportunities, stay informed, keep abreast, and so on. The second part of that you're asking around, how do we refine that? And I guess, absolutely do it with others. Don't do it in isolation. Invite trusted peers into the conversation and critically share your thoughts with your team. Are they on the same page? What contributions can they make at that strategic level? And then finally, the review. Well, we hold team meetings once or twice a year around strategy to review, you know, how the business is tracking and talk about things, including vision moving forward.
Yep.
Now, it's not something we revisit weekly, but I can remember an executive working in the public service once told me that their department's vision was to be the best agency in Australia. And it was asked every time a new initiative was planned, the question was put, how is this going to help us become the best in Australia? And I really like that. I think it's simple reinforcing of a vision. It makes it real, and it also holds planned actions to account. So so there it is.
It's pretty positive. Now, I've known ASC for a couple of years now, about 2.5 years. Whenever I've had dealings with your staff or with your organisation, it always seems a really positive environment in which the organisation is operating in. And much of that comes back to the leadership of the organisation. So perhaps from your point of view, what makes a strong leader?
Okay. Look, I think thanks for the compliment about ASC. Part of the reason I think we have such a successful environment there is because we have Sharon, our CEO, who kind of works hand in glove with me. So there are really two of us that take on that leadership role. But I guess if we're talking about leadership characteristics and qualities, then look, there's nothing new here. I think, you know, good leaders, they are naturals at building trust and respect. within their teams and their organizations. They do that through, you know, a mix of empathy, of great listening skills, and I'd actually really emphasize that one, good listening, a suppressed ego. Nothing wrong with having an ego, but I think if you let your ego run amok, it's going to probably damage relationships more than enhance them. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, you've got to show integrity. I love Tom Peters's work, and you know, he's talked for a long time about managing by walking around, being visible, mm-hmm. being positive, having an optimistic attitude. I also subscribe to the notion of this humble leadership, where you put others before yourself. You know, that concept of being the servant leader. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, this could be a really long list, but what I really, again, I'll quote Tom Peters, at the end of the day, don't be a dick, you know, and that's personally, ethically, and morally, and excuse the language, but, you know, I think that sums it up. Be a good person.
On that point, you talk about Sharon and yourself, so you have some connectivity there. You've got some unity there from a leadership point of view. And it's a question that perhaps we haven't discussed previously, but I'm going to put it to you because you also mentioned it in your response to our initial question about setting the vision for the business. And that is, when you're a leader, often it can be an isolating environment in which to work within. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so you're seeking... you know, a wise leader will often seek external sources that they can refer to and trusted influences to guide some of their decision making. How have you gone about that over the years?
In my current environment, Sharon, as our CEO, has been with the business for 18 years, which is remarkable. I just can't imagine why she would have stuck around for 18 years. So she's been on pretty much, you know, most of the journey with us. Mm. So I guess we get back to some of those words like trust and respect. And whilst she and I have really very different leadership styles and working styles, the two seem to work hand in glove. So I think, you know, that's good fortune in the first instance to have people in your leadership team who you can trust and respect and who bring perhaps complementary qualities to the roles. Yes. And so I think that's one of the fundamental reasons why we are successful as a business. If I think back to my time in the education department, I mean, you're absolutely right. That sense of isolation increases, interestingly, you know, with every step up the leadership ladder. You have fewer and fewer peers and colleagues that you can share things with. And by the time you get, you know, to the top, you've really got to look outside of your own organization. And I know certainly, you know, there are a number of different external organizations that, you know, leaders can go to share conversations with like-minded leaders from other organizations. Those things really help. The isolation factor is interesting. It's part of the deal.
But you would buy into the thought that bringing in fresh ideas and fresh perspectives from people that are successful, not just in the business world, but also in their personal lives, is relatively essential.
I think it's important. I'd balance that against being careful not to try and, you know, become someone who you're not. There are so many successful leaders out there, and they bring a mix of different qualities to the table. Mm. But I'd go back to trust and respect. And if every single leader in every position, every manager, every team leader lived by that ethos and demonstrated trust and demonstrated respect for their people, not blindly, then I think you'd see much healthier workplaces.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, it's an important point to ponder sometimes, I think. Moving along, when we're talking about delegation and we're talking about empowering the team, so it is, you know, to some extent a shared responsibility to run educational programs because the managing director just can't do it all. So when you're delegating aspects of workplace responsibility, what are you considering?
Yeah, the delegation story. We, you know, in our leadership programs, we talk about the inability to delegate as being a fundamental flaw in a leader. And I think that's really true because clearly if you try and take on everything or if you have a tendency to be a little bit controlling and not want to give things up, then, you know, you're denying other people the chance to grow and develop, and you're probably gonna head down a burnout path sooner than later. So, look, in terms of delegation, I think there are some fundamentals around delegation. I want to share with you a story that's outside of our business, but I think it wraps it up really nicely. So a manager in education, she took up a position at a new school. She was the head of mathematics. In her previous school, she had coached her faculty to run the annual Westpac maths competition, which was quite a task in organisation and supervision. And in her induction program with her new principal in this new school, she mentioned that she would love to do this with her new faculty. And his response was, forget it. They are set in their ways and you'll never get them to do what they actually think is your job. And perhaps, you know, there was a subliminal message there from the principal as well, I suspect. You know, maybe he didn't think it was their job either. So anyway, she took it to her new team, you know, a month later, start of the new year, explained how well it had worked in her previous school and how the faculty developed, you know, new skills that they could put on their CVs. So then she asked for just one volunteer at her team meeting, her first team meeting, to be her offsider for the first year. And to her surprise, five people put their hands up. So she coached two of those. They took on the project. They executed it well. They in turn coached the next two for the next year's from the next year volunteers and so on. And at the end of it, you know, you've got a lot of people benefiting from this. The teachers involved developed new skill sets. Certainly the manager, so she could put value into other tasks. And look, I think that's the fundamental of delegation. You look for people who are willing to come on board. They have the talent, or if not, you're prepared to coach and train them. They love the challenge, and you can clearly show the benefits. So, you know, bring that across to my group, and without doubt, it's been, you know, my facilitators spring to mind because they have been challenged with an incredibly rapid learning curve over the past 2 months. And, you know, I can't do all of that stuff and I wouldn't want to. And, and they have picked up the responsibility and they have, you know, kind of organized themselves. And there's been mini delegation within the team as people take on, you know, certain leadership roles to drive that whole transition across to live virtual classrooms.
Yeah, fantastic. It's pretty important in the days in which we're working in, isn't it?
It's crucial. It's crucial. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, managers who don't look for opportunities to delegate good jobs to their staff. I mean, I should make the point there are traps along the way with delegation, and you know, managers need to be conversant with what those barriers are, so that they can guarantee success.
Well, what are some of those barriers?
Yeah, fair question. I figured if I threw that out there, you'd take me to it. So, look, things such as you know, unwilling staff. You know, don't delegate to people who clearly at this point in time, for whatever reason, are not willing. Poorly defined tasks. So, lack of clarity.
Yes.
Lack of support in coaching or resources. So you give them the job. But yeah, if they do need some training, if it's not provided, that's a disaster. Or if you fail to give them the resources they need, that will lead to frustration and you won't get the project done. I think for some managers, it's about, you know, delegation is not just handing over the unpleasant or dull tasks that you do. It's also about sometimes giving away the stuff you really love.
Yes.
And also being sure you share delegation around. There's invariably in teams the willing workhorses who will put their hands up for everything. And tempting to just hand the work over, but I think that's denying the opportunity for others. Going to potentially burn those folk out. And I mean, I guess the last thing is don't over monitor. That gets back to the controlling thing. Give them some space, but also don't desert them and don't turn your back on them.
That's right. There's that balance there, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think if we delegate wisely, then people feel motivated to come to work. They feel that their opinions matter and they count, and that they're not just a number but an active member of a team.
You're dead right, and it ticks off on a number of things that the Gallup engagement survey that your listeners may be aware of tells us after 30 years of research and, you know, millions of surveys conducted. You know, they tell us that if people feel valued and if people are given the opportunity to do their best, they are essential ingredients in building an engaged workforce.
And it flows on to retention of staff and onboarding of staff and all the like. So yeah, it's pretty important.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Now I know that we've sort of touched on this already, but I certainly realise that leadership is, you know, great qualities of a leader is pretty broad. But do you have any key points you'd like to share?
Yeah, look, I suppose the things we covered off earlier, but I guess if we throw, you know, the visionary leader into the mix, if I was to make a list, I think I'd start with be prepared never to accept the status quo, because that breeds complacency. Bring talented people on board with complementary skill sets. Mm-hmm. Don't jump from one project to another. That can be a great source of frustration for your team.
Yep.
Make sure you've got completers in your staffing mix. It's easy to be creative and come up with the great ideas, but often those folk sort of move on to the next great idea. And so be sure that, as a leader, you know you've got complementary skills and amongst that you've got people who are good at doing the detail and getting the job done.
Yep.
Some of it's about, I guess, courage to take strategic risks, let go of setbacks quickly, learn from them.
Yep.
And also, a strong sense of purpose can be important.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as that's not, I guess, misdirected or leads to inflexibility.
I find when I reflect upon adult education institutions, I find that if you're able to take a step back, they're actually really colourful organisations, because there's often the delivery of various qualifications by experienced staff that come from, as you say, very different backgrounds, but together make a dynamic team. What is the most fulfilling aspect of leading your team?
There are probably many. On one level, I think it doesn't feel like leadership. It's actually being part of a tight-knit team, being part of a group where there's tremendous loyalty, a wonderful work ethic, but also importantly, you know, people know how to share a laugh, and we're really good in ASC at laughing at ourselves, which I think is crucial.
Yep.
But on another level, one of the really fulfilling aspects of leading a business is seeing people grow in their roles. We've been faced with a lot of rapid change, of course, as everybody has in the past 2 months. And it's been nothing short of inspiring for me to see people take on new challenges. So a case in point, our training coordinator, Michelle Knight, probably spent, you know, between 35-40% of her time back in the old days managing face-to-face training requirements. So that was resource preparation, printing, mm-hmm. binding, managing training rooms, and so on. And she did that really well. So with all our training now live virtual classrooms, she no longer manages the production of print materials, and she's now learning how to work virtually in the learning management system. Mm-hmm. And that's become a significant part of her job that's been reinvented, and she's doing it really well.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
In the same way, I should give a shout out to others in the business. You know, our IT officer, Nick, has flourished managing the virtual classrooms, and our facilitators, and I've mentioned them a few times before, are just growing in leaps and bounds as they become experts in running, you know, interactive digital learning.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Great, great success stories. Yeah. Would you like to share your website just so the listeners, you know, have somewhere to follow up if they would like to look further into AC training and development?
Would be happy to. You can find us at www.asctraining.com.au.
Fantastic. Tony, thanks so much for your time again. It's really worthwhile just sitting down with you and sharing some of the aspects of your effective leadership within ASC. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Lee. I've really enjoyed the time.
If you'd like to learn more about this topic and other professional development opportunities, visit www.transformationconsultancy.com.au.